The World Show with Nikki B.
But right now, it is my pleasure always to have Steve Dyer on the show. Welcome back to The World Show. Steve, how are you?
Hi, Nikki. I'm good. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Well, usually I'm used to you in studio, but thank you for joining us anyway on Zoom. Yes.
Sign of the time.
Yes, and you're at your home where your beautiful studio is, where all this magic comes forth from.
Yes. I'm seeing it right here, right
yes,
now.
Yes, beautiful, beautiful. So, Steve, wow, this album. In fact, I've got to tell everybody that when Steve gave me this album, Revision, I listened to it and I sent him a message and I said, wow, 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 this is so powerful. And then I listened again and I had to send him another message saying exactly the same thing. And last night when I prepared, I wanted to send him a message, but I thought, I've already told him and it's about 2 o'clock in the morning. So I'll tell him tomorrow. What an epic album, Steve. Revision. Absolutely beautiful. So,
thanks.
Yes. So let's start there. When did Revision come forth? I mean, was this during lockdown? Was it before? When did you start working on this album?
Yeah, it's a lockdown baby.
Yes.
So I started in lockdown. Often I'd wake up early in the morning. You know, I find that working early in the morning for me is the greatest because your energy is the cleanest. And often as you go through the day, you get polluted with worries and structure and things like that. So I find that in the morning when it's very quiet, I'm lucky, blessed to be out where I can go into the studio at any time. And I started off working on Revision during lockdown.
Okay. And, you know, I'm interested to know your process of working because your albums are always so consciously presented. Also, there's so much mindfulness to all your albums. So is it the theme that you start with, or do you find it's working on the pieces that eventually bring you the theme?
Well, look, I think most of my albums are self-produced. So I have to try and be an artist and then edit myself, which is often time-consuming. You know, and there are other projects that I'd like to do where there's more involvement in a production side with other people. But, you know, every song is different. Sometimes it'll start with a beat. Sometimes it will start with an idea of a melody.
Yes.
And often you work through stuff and you sift out what is not working and maybe keep what it hopefully is, and then build on that. And then from there, when I get a structure or a skeleton of a song, that's when I bring in musicians. I often think long and hard about which musicians I want to involve because that's vital. And then when you lay it out and share it with other people, you might have an idea what they're going to play, but what they do play, it just brings another magic to the whole thing. And so I'm really, you know, I was really impressed with all the musicians on Revision and how they came to understand the concept and the music. And it's so, for me, that caused something that was quite holistic.
And I suppose that's one of your skills also from musically directing projects, really, is knowing who should come in where. And I suppose it's a balance of knowing what you want from them, but giving them the space to do what they need to do.
Yeah, exactly. It's a question of synergy, actually. And different elements in different people. I mean, that's what makes us all so beautiful is that some of us are more extrovert, some of us are quieter. But you know what I do find is that often I tend to work with the younger musicians now because I find that they're fresh and open. And so most times they listen to what I'm saying.
But again, they bring the energy, I always think, you know, as I get older as well. Yes, I hope I can share some wisdom and experience, but thanks to them for the energy they bring. Yes.
And I want them to listen and say, wow, you know, I want to be part of the now. You know, I don't want to be someone, oh, yeah, you remember that guy. Yeah, we used to listen to him 10 years ago.
Yes.
So I'm happy that people are saying that, look, I can hear that there's breaking some new ground, and it sounds like, because I'm exploratory. I think that's what juices me in terms of creativity is to be able to stretch things and explore, but to make those explorations work. That's the ultimate challenge.
Absolutely. There's so much I want to ask you about some of the songs. And in fact, as I said to you before we went on air, I wish I could play all of them tonight, but we won't manage. But for now, I'm going to start with a track that, from what you were telling me, is really people are, you know, grabbing onto this one. And it's a track that I've already played on the World Show. I'm not sure if it's once or twice. I'd have to go back. But African Ontology, tell me about this track and who's working with you on this track.
Stembiso Bengu is playing trumpet. And really, I have to give a shout out to him in terms of a lot of the tracks on the album. He always just comes with such a musicianship. And then we have Sibusiso Sibanyoni on bass, Sims Shabalala. Both of them played a lot on the album. I have members of the Dire tribe.
Yes.
Which that's Pokani Dire.
And I recognize that. Yes.
my daughter Busi is helping with some, you know, vocal chants here and there. And, I hope I'm not leaving anybody out on this. So what we did with the horns, it's actually two horns, but we layered them.
Okay.
So,
yes.
You know, I play soprano and tenor. Sibusiso plays trumpet, but we did different takes. So it's an amalgamation of a lot of that. Yeah.
Well, I'm pleased you explained that, because actually when I was listening to the album, I was thinking this album really has captured almost like a big band kind of feel, you know, and I was wondering, how did you pull that off during lockdown in your studio? But really, this for me sounds like if it's performed live, it would be great to have a full lineup. You know, it's that big sound.
We'll rely on you for the budget for that, Nikki. Yeah. Look forward to that, because that would be great.
Yes. And African Ontology, tell me about the theme behind the track.
Okay, well, you know, ontology generally is ways of being. And so what I find, having been born in Africa and lived here for a long time, is that the way of being is different. So often if you look at a lot of music that gets produced, you'll have a chorus, you'll have a verse, you'll have what they call a pre-chorus, you'll have a solo section. It's very ordered. It's often clinical. Whereas in Africa, there's so much interplay between people on a daily basis in terms of exchanging ideas and being aware of the other person as well as yourself. So it's much more a communal living experience than just being like individualistic. And so that's what I hoped to showcase in African Ontology. You won't hear a verse and then a chorus. You'll hear certain ideas. They'll come and they'll go. And then they'll reappear. And so, yeah, it's something like that. I wanted to express how I think we, and often in the improvised tradition and the community that we have, how we relate to each other.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. Lots more that I want to ask Steve. Of course, Steve Dyer with me. This incredible new album is called Revision. And I'm going to play you the first track, but you're going to find out more of what I want to know, because I'm intrigued. And it's such an incredible, incredible offering. Here is African Ontology. Dyer 959. African Ontology from Steve Dyer. His new album is called Revision. And actually, that one deserves a clap. Absolutely beautiful, beautiful. Always. Now, Steve, as I touched on earlier, you know, about the theme, you've called this album Revision. Where does the title come from? And once again, you know, it appears to me from what you shared about this album that it was, you have been going through, like I think so many of us, or most of us, quite a self-reflective time. Do you think that impacted on the theme and the essence of what you are sharing with this album?
Well, I've had the ideas that I shared in terms of the impetus behind the album for a long time, but they seem to crystallize with this project. My main thing, Nikki, is that we spend so much time complaining about what is wrong rather than defining what is right and what we want. So we should live with a vision for and not a reaction to all the time. And so this is one of the blessings of being an artist, is that you can envision utopia, and you can envisage a world that you wanted. So in that way, I'm looking forward with revision to say that we should have more vision in the way we conduct our lives and how we progress, because these are really tough times. But it's also a revision of what happened in the past and what went wrong. Because when I was in Botswana, you know, in the exile days, we had this really dreamlike vision of what we wanted for South Africa, and we all bought into that. And the emotion was so pure in intent. And through the years now, what we find is that gradually that momentum has just slipped and ebbed away. And so I think that is also a thing of looking at revision and where did we go wrong? As Ray Phiri said, tell me, where did we go wrong?
Yes, absolutely. Mm. But I liked what you said, because it's on one hand, revision as in revising what's gone, but also the way you phrased it in the beginning of that chat was revision being the key.
Vision.
So, yes.
We need vision, and we need visionaries to drive our societies. And I don't see much of that happening here.
Yes.
So, except in music. So, yes. as there was that placard that Brad Holmes had in the baseline, "In Music We Trust."
Yes.
I'm thankful every day that I'm a musician, because music never lets you down. You know, I may let music down often, maybe, but music has never let me down.
I echo that completely. I agree with you on that one. But, and it's the one thing that kept us going through these times. But on that note, continue.
Yeah, well, if you look at the tremendous role that music has carried, you know, when I went out to Botswana, and I just got thrown into meeting with Bra Hugh and Bra Jonas, playing with them, and that was freedom music that was being played.
Yes.
And the question now is, what is the freedom music we should be playing now? Because it's different, you know, and hence I say that I always want to look forward and explore, you know. Identity, the question of identity is always central to so much of what musicians do. And if you look at what there's a real assertion of an identity of South African in the younger generation, and also with the recognition that they want to be much more part of the rest of Africa. And so this is an assertion that happens across the board. People are saying that in whichever discipline they are, is that, listen, we've had enough of being dictated to on how we should live, and we want to live like this.
Yes.
And so, and then within that, the identity of me as an Anglo-African, what is my statement to my country and to the wider world? And so in terms of revision, you know, I don't see why the lexicon that we use to describe ourselves in this country has not changed since apartheid. And so we need a revision of that. And also, you know, people keep on saying, follow the signs. If we follow the signs, we will come to the understanding, as Robert Sobukwe said so many years ago, that there's only one race to which we all belong, and that is the human race.
Yes.
The problem is that with so many ethnicities in our country and with so much baggage, the kind of idea that whenever you say that, look, we belong to one human race, they say, oh, there's that light guy, you know, talking Kumbaya and Rainbow Nation stuff. Mm-hmm. So that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that, you know, recognizing a common humanity, but also fighting prejudice in all its forms are not incompatible actions. And so that's where I find myself in this place and time, and that's what I'm trying to convey, that kind of message. But, you know, whether that's that is a conscious viewpoint that I have, but I think when an artist is true to themselves, or whether when they want to deliver something powerful, that doesn't come, you know, I don't sit at the piano and think, okay, now how do we show that we all
solve the world's problems,
uncommon ancestry, etc. No, it must be a subconscious thing, I think, of all your ideas, they can crystallize, as I say, into something musical, but it's a subconscious action on the part of the creator and the composer.
Absolutely. And it comes back to me of that concept of sometimes the best way to inspire or live change, if you like, is the way we live. It's how we are, you know, rather than, and I think that's what music and compositions and arts touch on, is it's not so much about having to use the words, if you like, but it's about the essence of that meaning that you are portraying. And I think it comes across really well. Yeah.
Thank you, Nikki. Yes, it's that imparting of it in a sensory way.
Yes.
I've often found that when I'm trying to explain something musical, like a song or whatever that I'm working on, to people, I'll explain, and then I'll press the button to say, here's the music. And
yes.
You know, all of a sudden, people get it. So, you know, we have a tremendous pool of shared emotion as human beings.
Yes.
And music has the ability to tap into that and cut through where too much analytical thought doesn't.
Absolutely. On that note, I'm going to play the next track, which is, I describe this as a radical track. It's like, it's very radical, very beautiful, very radical, very future forward. And this one is Birthright. And I suppose that also touches on what we've been talking about. What is birthright?
Well, everyone has a birthright. So whether whatever class, whatever caste, whatever color, everyone has a birthright. And if you see what has happened, people increasingly in the world, especially in marginalized communities, are recognizing this and say, look, this is what we are. We, you know, take us, recognize us as, you know, as just as you are.
Just as important. Just as important. Yes.
And so the idea of this is birthright is that everyone has one. And so there's an urgency about it, and maybe a little bit of anger and a bit of impatience.
Yes.
That's my feeling, is that it's pressing, because people are pressing, you know, the world order, where you have crazily rich people that control everything, and you have so many poor people and suffering people. It can't continue. And this is a kind of a musical statement to say, we need change.
Beautiful. I'm going to play now Birthright of Steve Dyer's revision. Of course, the man himself is with us on The World Show. Kaya 959. Wow, Birthright from Steve Dyer off his album A Revision. You see how futuristic it was. That one took me on a total trip. And as I said to you, Steve, there's a sense of urgency about it, which really echoes what you were saying about that song and about what we face today.
Yeah, we need change. We need change.
And quickly, that urgency.
Yeah.
Yes.
We do.
Absolutely.
And it's a global thing. I'm not just talking about you know, our particular situation. If you look at globally, it's a common problem universally.
You know, you spoke earlier about the situations that we're facing in our country, in the world at the moment, and you touched on the fact that if there's one thing that is going well, certainly in this country, it's the incredible music we have. And you know, I was thinking about that, because for me, something that I often address is the role role of artists to, on one hand, reflect, and on the other hand, to represent or to offer, you know, to put forth, if you like. So if there's anything to go by, then I think we'll be okay if we look at what is coming out of the music in this country.
Look, Nikki, I think also, I mean, South Africans have such an amazing sense of humor. So even through the really troubled times, we always find a way to laugh, and always we are resilient across the board. And so I have faith, you know, that things will get better for sure. You know, you have to have faith.
Yes, absolutely. And in many ways, I feel, and I have noticed that there's coming through this pandemic, or we're still in it, but come working through it, working through the crises we've had, there's incredible, there's almost a sense of compassion, which I've noticed, is being emphasized now. And obviously, as we speak, not by the powers that be, most probably, but certainly on a human to human level, I'm finding this, it's really, you know, inspired us to not only care for each other, but also to say, what are those things of value in our lives? And something that you'd written in writing about this album, you wrote, and I'm going to quote, and I'd like you to expand on the line I'm going to quote on. But you said, if I were to leave tomorrow or even today, what would my greatest regret be? So tell us a little bit about what you thought when you wrote that, or what you were thinking about.
Well, you know, Nikki, through various phases in my life, I've done quite extensive meditation, and it seems when I get into the clearest possible state, it seems so obvious that there should not be this, everyone needs opportunity. So opportunity is key. And if you look at the inventiveness in a lot of young South Africans now that did not have the opportunity, you know, apartheid was forcing people for a menial task, existence. And now when doors of learning and culture are open to some, not to enough, and there are problems, but you can see the tremendous inventiveness of the human spirit. And so for me, this is what I feel, is that in some way I want to share that offering in whatever I do, to say that, that our most positive, powerful, and unifying life force is that we are all human. And if you go back to the science again, and, you know, I did some ancestry testing, and I did a theater production called Color Me Human, where we all did, in fact. And you look at where people come from, it all relates back to the motherland of Africa. There are two places within Africa, which is, one is the cradle of humankind, and the other is the Rift Valley in Kenya, where, you know, we have fossils that indicate that's where humanity was born.
Yes.
I know that, you know, and I know that when I get into this discussion, people say, okay, some people believe in evolution, other people have religious beliefs, whatever. And my idea is not to be part of an argument at all. You know, I think what we need to do is we need to celebrate unity, but also celebrate diversity. Because when we are diverse, we have different thought processes within different cultures within the world. Yes. And when they collide and challenge each other, that's where the best in humanity, I believe, will come through.
Yes.
And so this is the idea, that how can we be so blinkered and blind that we often let ethnicity, tribalism, caste, some people thinking that they're of royal blood and others are not, how can we let that happen when, you know, technologically humanity has developed to such an extent that people are looking at going to Mars and living there? Well, we need to first start living on Earth in an equitable way before... Yes. We start thinking of, going to other places, in the universe. That's my feeling. So I think I've always been grounded, and my mother helped me tremendously in a moral compass grounding that recognized that whoever you deal with, whether it's the king or whether it's somebody that is sweeping the street, appeal to them and relate to them on one common human level.
Yes, I often refer to it as saying everyone is special. You know, everybody has something special that makes them so uniquely special.
Yes, look, you know, I've been in workshops, you know, not necessarily music workshops, but often at the end of a workshop, you know, the facilitator will go around and ask everybody, so what did you take from here? And you just find in everybody and everybody's response, there's something that you didn't think of yourself and that they are offering a collective. And that for me is so, life-affirming.
Yes. But you also spoke about, in describing the project behind that, in some ways you felt that maybe you hadn't done enough. I mean, if I look at you, Steve Dyer, as a person slash artist, because I think as artists it's really difficult. It's not just a job, it is who we are, you know. But when I look at you as a person slash artist, you've actually done so much. And I don't just mean as in the number of albums, which there's quite a lot as well, but just in terms of living your truth despite environmental challenges and maintaining that. But you spoke about that as perhaps you haven't done enough.
Well, I think that this goes again to history and how history has treated our place in the world. So in as much as I can say, you know, the young South African musicians are really coming up with great things. There's so much music and energy here. Is that really recognized in the rest of the world? You know, so across the board in so many disciplines, I believe that we are, there is no other society that we should be bowing down to. But it's not recognized by the wider world.
Yes.
So when I say it hasn't been recognized, I think that we have fundamentals. If we look at some of the greatest human philosophers of the 20th century came from South Africa. If you look at people like Steve Biko, you look at Robert Sobukwe, you look at Nelson Mandela, you look at O.R. Tambo. I mean, these were major figures within, world
in the globe,
in terms of, of world philosophy.
Yes.
And there are amazing philosophers now, in terms of African ontology. I have a guru that, and I've been reading his book. It's called African Philosophy Through Ubuntu by Mokgobe Ramose. He's an older statesman, but we don't know him.
Please repeat his name, Steve, because it just glitched as you were saying his name.
Oh, Ramose, Ntate Ramose. And he's written this book, and it says so many truths. He goes back in philosophy to other times within the Western tradition, and identifies the problems and in such a knowledgeable way. And so these kind of people as well, they should be on the world stage, you know. So instead of all those motivational speakers saying dream it and you can live it, we need some hard facts about what went wrong and why it went wrong and the vestiges of that are still with us today. So what I'm saying is that we should not always doubt ourselves. And this is one thing that I believe that South Africans suffer from, is self-doubt.
Yes.
We don't need to doubt so much, because we have so much to offer the world, and it's just a question of them recognizing that. So any ideas that I've shaped, they've been shaped by learning from people around me and being schooled often in the older exile days by very, very great thinkers. And so it's not just a question of me regretting a personal voice being espoused, but it's a thing of a collective voice that needs to really be heard, and it needs to resonate across the globe.
Yes, and it amplifies almost in one's own sense of what one can, one's own sense of what one can contribute. Yes.
Yeah, and it's the communal contribution, because if you look at the world now and how individualistic it's become, and that's a worrying thing as well about how that has influenced the youth within this country, we need to get back to this thing of, as a committee, we are far stronger. And, you know, this idea of individuality and striving for a lot of money and greed and acquisition, that is not the answer for humanity, and that increasingly is being borne out by what's happening in the wider world.
Beautifully put. Steve Dyer, I'm going to play the next song, and I'm pleased because, you know, honestly, I could play all these songs, but I said to Steve, choose a song, and he said a song that is special for him on this album. I'm sure they all are, but I also love this one. I'm going to play it first, and when we come back on the other side, Steve can explain a little bit more about Parallel Streams. Steve Dyer, the album is Revision. You're listening to the album and the artist on The World Show with me, Nikki B. Kaya 959. Parallel Streams from Steve Dyer off his brand new album, Revision. Again, I have to give it a big clap. and double that clap. Wow, Steve. So beautiful. Talk to me about Parallel Streams, what you were thinking when you titled this.
Well, I'm thinking that, you know, we all live our lives in kind of parallel streams because we all are involved in so many different things. You know, you're a DJ, I'm in the studio, someone else is an accountant, someone is milking cows in the, you know, Platteland.
And even within,
so many.
Even within you, you're in the studio, you're a performer, you're a father, you're a friend.
Yes.
You know.
So it's actually, and so now when it gets to musical terms, I've never been a purist. So I love the improvised tradition, and I love the groove, and you know, Africa is full of rhythm, and so I tried to combine these things all together, and so it's parallel streams. So if you say what genre is that, I don't know, because it's got groove, but it's also got some kind of free playing. So there are a whole lot of things happening all at once, which is kind of the story of our lives, actually.
Yes.
That so many different energies are like fighting with each other and moving around. And so that's what I tried to portray in Parallel Streams.
And that's amazing that you touched on it, because as you were saying it, it kind of brought up thoughts of you having worked extensively with Jonas Gwangwa, as you'd mentioned earlier on, but also with Bri Hugh, and even on this album, you've got a tribute to Mano Dibango. And when I think of,
yes,
of all of those three, for example, and many more, which I haven't named, they are largely defined in the category of jazz. But as you say, they also African musicians, if you like, you know, and they also, if I look at all of those three, actually, they weren't purists in their expression.
Yeah, I think, you know, each to their own, you know, follow the bliss. And so my bliss is, you know, it's really cool to be living here, because there's so much untapped rhythms and untapped sounds and textures that you can feed into. Whereas I think in a lot of places, like in the USA, and that there's so many people are kind of trying to fight for one particular niche that they've got, where we have got an open canvas as big as the African savannah, where we can do whatever we want, and people are doing it, and I hope I'm one of them.
And as you speak about improvisation, I mean, that is just the essence of Africa, or music that comes out of Africa since time immemorial. It has been, you know, I've even got this, I don't know why, but I've just touched on this vision of women, people singing a cappella across the river and answering each other the call and response. Again, that in itself is a form of improvisation.
It is. And if you look at, like, I had the opportunity to work with Mom Dorothy Masuku, and even though she's singing songs that often are quite structured, and that if you look at the way and listen to the way that she sings every verse or every line of the song, it's always different. It's the same, but she's putting in inflections all the time. So she's actually improvising within the context of structure.
Yes.
And that is very unique. I also worked with Busi Mhlongo, and the same thing is that within the structure, there's always this element of freedom. And I suppose, well, with instrumentalists like we are, you know, you can take that further. But improvising is a very important thing, because for me, you know, to do a song from beginning to end where the outcome is already determined, that is often Western classical music. And I think, you know, you can open up to everybody being able to free themselves in. And I think if you look even at dance on this continent, you know, not everyone is trying to dance exactly precisely in step. There's an expression, an expression of self within whatever creativity happens. And that for me, I really find quite liberating. Mm.
You know, and you speak about Dorothy, and you speak about Busi Mhlongo, and you're so right, because it almost allows for, within that structure, it allows for the magic of the moment to be added. And it's in that moment that, that, in fact, I need to touch on that, because you were a key part of Busi Mhlongo's last album, Amakholwa Believers. And that album is so difficult to get. And everybody says, please, 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 I must give you a call one of these days. We must get that album re-released. But just on that note, thank you for your work on that album. I know that you were very key in that project.
You know, we spent some, she spent quite a lot of time here, and we got to know each other. And yeah, she was just an amazing, amazing musician, and just a wicked sense of humor. You know,
she used to
play cards with my daughter, who was also called Busi. And she would say, listen, you have to call me Granny Gogo. So it's double Granny, because I'm old. But then she used to cheat, you see, the cards. And then when she'd get caught out by little Busi, she would have this, you know, wicked laugh. So, look, I don't think she had as much of an output, a musical output, as she should have had.
Yes.
But at least she had some.
Yes.
Yeah.
And another great, great being and musician that you worked extensively with, obviously, is the late, great Tuku Oliver Mtukudzi. And I'm sure that also impacted. You know, looking at all these people that you've worked so closely with, parallel to doing your parallel to doing your Steve Dyer projects, your Mahube projects. But is there any one lesson, anecdote, or something very important or special, that name one of them, that one of them left you with?
Well, you know, everyone is different, Nikki. I think with Tugu, it was his resilience and his work ethic.
Like,
you know, and in Zimbabwe especially, the musicians there are really focused on often playing together, playing in groups. And so he'd be very steadfast in, often he'd be the first guy at the rehearsal. The other thing is that he would not touch a drink, alcohol, nothing.
Yes.
And in conversation, he was not the life and soul of the party. He would just sit there and ponder while people were talking. But he used to love extroverts around him. And I think that he used to, whatever he said, his messages, you know, I don't speak Shona very well. I know, you know, some cursory words, but if you look at the depth of what he was saying and how he used to go into proverbs and deep, deep messages that often, if you got five people listening to him, they would think that you would get
five different interpretations
of what the song really meant. You know, so even though, you know, the beat was kind of infectious and happy, often a lot of the messages were within the proverbs and the way he shaped the language. I think that was one of the key things with him. On the other hand, someone like Mambusi, at some point she was asked to do some stuff by, you know, esteemed Zulu poets. And she said, no, but I'm just trying to say something simple to the people. That's going to clutter my song.
Yes.
So it shows me that there's no one way of really approaching things.
Yes.
Mum D, she was just herself, you know. She said, she had this one song, Nginje, I'm like this. I was like this. I'll be like this.
Yes.
Until I die.
I love that track. Yes.
And what she was great with is that she epitomized Southern Africa. you know, because she had experience within Zimbabwe, within South Africa, within Zambia. So she was really a repository of so much of the musical culture of the region, as opposed to being from a specific place in it.
Yes.
Yeah. So they're all valuable lessons, and look, they all departed now, which you know, I think, and increasingly now within the times that we're living, we're reminded of the fragility of life.
Yes.
And the preciousness of it. So that's what I the life lessons I learned from that is try and do what you need to do right away. Don't delay.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. Now, I was hoping to play two songs to end off the feature, but we've run out of time, so I'm going to end off with Bittersweet and Watercolors. I told Steve I wanted to play it, but I won't have time tonight. I'll have to play it next week. Watercolors I wanted to play because I always love when Steve plays flute, and it's just such a beautiful flute song. But for tonight, let's end off with Bittersweet, and I thank you so much for your work, your stories, and, you know, you speak about these great people that you've just spoken about that have left us. And I'm thankful that, and I hope, you know, you and I are about the same generation. We're going to be around long, Steve. But for our time here, for our time here, let us, please, I want to thank you for the way that you impart your mastery onto those next generations. Thank you for your work always, Steve Dyer.
Thank you so much, Nikki. One love. Thank you.
One love to you too. And thank you for this beautiful album revision. One more thing. Is it available? It's available on digital platforms. Is it going to be available on CD or vinyl?
Oh, so many people have asked me about that. So we're working on that.
I hope so, because it truly is, and I don't say this lightly, Steve, it truly is a masterpiece. I want a physical copy. So let us know. Yes. Thank you so much, Steve. Thanks for joining us on The World Show and inspiring us always with your music.
Thank you too.
The World Show with Nikki B on Kaya 959.